Ask the Podcast Coach for May 17th, 2014.
Let's get ready to podcast.
Ah, there you go. Nothing like a little upbeat R&B to get you going on a Saturday morning and get you ready to have some podcasting questions answered. Welcome to Ask the Podcast Coach. I am your host, Dave Jackson, from the School of Podcasting. And joining me from theaverageguy.tv is the one and only Jim Cullison. Jim, how's it going?
Greetings, Dave. Happy Saturday morning to you twice.
Yes. And if you don't listen live, you miss a lot of fun. And you learn every week why live is not my first choice for people just starting in podcasting.
Cause, yeah, it can be a little tough. Lots of buttons to push before you go. Yeah. You know, I always forget the audio part. I get the hangout right because I for whatever reason, although I've messed that up too, but I always forget to start the Spreaker one because it's on a separate PC. And so I'll get going and then look over and Spreaker's not running yet. And
crap. It's fun.
Push play.
But if you're listening, you can come out and join us in the chat room. It's at schoolofpodcasting.com/live or askthepodcastcoach.com/live. Either one will get you there. But we're here every Saturday morning, 10:30 Eastern Standard Time. And we answer any question you might have. It doesn't really matter. We kind of talk. We usually have kind of pre-made topics that we talk about just in the event nobody calls in. But so if you're like, oh, I was going to call in, but you guys were talking about, you know, topic A and I wanted to talk about topic D. It's like, no, feel free to come on in and ask whatever question you want. And it would help, I guess, if I gave you that number. That number, of course, is – why do I always have to search for this? Oh, there it is. It's right at the top. No wonder I couldn't see it. 845-262-2401. He said trying to copy it from – I'm using Colin Studio again. Still using it. They've been behaving since we've gone back to using them. I think we've only dropped, a couple people maybe?
Yeah, we haven't dropped a call in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually worked out pretty good. I think they probably flagged your account as like the special pass-through and work every time account after you complained about it.
Yeah, it's like, because yeah, unfortunately people were going, yeah, I was going to go. I was going to use that. Dave said not to. And that's when the guy got me on Twitter and goes, hey, why aren't you using our service anymore? I'm like, because you keep dropping my callers and that's just not going to work. So there you go. But so, Jim, I understand you, was it you that invented the wireless or was it somebody you saw or?
No. So I've been talking about this on my own show for a while. We are putting in a learning studio at Gallup, which in the concept is really, you know, MOOCs or distance learning or tele-learning. That's nothing new, right? Corporations, businesses have been doing that for a long time.
MOOCs?
But you know what a MOOC is? Massive online course, I think is what they call those. Universities do them to – they basically just do a podcast where they broadcast a professor giving a class and then they just put it on YouTube and they call those MOOCs. And so that concept's not new. But what I'm trying to do, I just saw this. I just watched the newest Captain America movie. And in the movie, you know, and I forget the name of the guy.
Captain America?
No, the other guy. with the patch.
Bad guy?
What's his name? No, he's the good guy. The good guy with the patch. Anyways, he's in a conference room. Somebody in the chat room will get that out for me. He's in a conference room, and he's got four of the cabinet members. Nick Fury is who that is. Thank you, Ryan Parker. I knew Ryan would get that for me. So, and there's these four images of the board members and there's somewhere else, but it's this three dimensional kind of very good sound quality, very good video quality. And it's like, as he's talking with them, it's like they're all there. They can see each other in space and relative space and time. So we're working on something like that, and actually Cisco has a telepresence product that's like that, but it's very expensive. And so we've begun to try to look at how do we take consumer grade cameras, microphones, things like that, and how do we deliver a class that's interactive and has multiple camera angles? Because that's the other thing, some of these classes, you know, it's one camera angle with the instructor who's looking at the camera. And be honest with you, a 2-hour class like that, snoozer, right? And then the other drawback to that is that you don't get the you don't get great interaction a lot of times in between the class and the instructor. And so we're trying to build this more like a podcast as opposed to a learning class. So you'll be – it's like we're doing now, except more people in the Hangout. So maybe it's more like a podcaster's roundtable. And but it's done in a class format. And how would you do that? And so I actually built a studio. I'm building this studio. And then I also podcast for Gallup. So I built a podcaster's studio, so to speak, while I was at it, because in this training, it's going to be so technology intense. It's going to have a producer, right? Mm-hmm. The days of an instructor coming in and being able to set up all the tech by himself and man all the controls, that's silly. It just can't be done. So we'll have a producer. You should have an instructor and a producer. The single double is a podcast. Okay, so that's all the background. So one of the things I wanted to do was line up the instructor with a rig where he would be he could podcast but would be mobile. And so this week I ordered Shure, S-H-U-R-E, the Shure, you know, like microphones. But they make some really good lapel and wireless receivers in that mid-price range. So they were about $600 each. So not super cheap. They're not ATR 2100s, right? But both the body pack for the receiver and for the lapel, about $600 each. But the instructor, in theory, would have a lapel microphone, and then he'll have a body pack receiver that's bringing his sound and the sound of the Hangouts back into earbuds. And so he's completely wired for sound. So just like we are right now, except he's completely wireless. And he can hear the entire Hangout going on at the same time or whatever software that we choose to use for that. So I haven't seen a lot of those setups being done that way. If you're wondering what the body pack for the Shure component was, it's a Shure – oh, and it's really long. PSM 200 hybrid body pack is what it is. There's a long part number, model number, P2TR215CL-H2. Just repeat that back and you can write it down. But Dave, I was super skeptical. I'm plugging that into a Mackie Pro FX12 that I bought a couple weeks ago in the studio. I knew I was going to need more channels, so I bought a bigger board for it. But you actually plug the microphone into this hybrid body pack and then plug the body pack into the soundboard. And then you run a line out from the board into the body pack so that the person listening can hear the entire mix. So it's a mix minus is really what it is. It's a built-in setup mix minus for you. And it works. I couldn't believe how easy it worked. I just a couple plugged in, boom, it was working. And I put earbuds in, plugged into the body pack. Put the lapel mic on. I could hear myself. I could hear the Hangout. It was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one of those things that's kind of a non-traditional, you know, when we think of podcasting, that's a setup. I still wouldn't podcast that way. But if you think about an instructor in a room who needs to be mobile.
Yeah, I'm going to say. And then is anybody watching this then? So they're watching him.
Yeah. Yeah. So say you're the instructor and we have, and you have 10 students. And so the students would be on the bottom. Well, let's break that down. Say you have 5 students and you're the instructor. So we'll have instructor cam, which will be you. Right. We'll also provide PowerPoint cam or whatever you want to do, presentation cam. That'll be another Hangout that we bring into this session that all it's doing is capturing the screen of the PowerPoint slides. Then we'll have a whiteboard cam where it's a dedicated camera that's just pointing at the whiteboard, right? So think of it in the classroom, there's 3 different camera angles. And the beauty of the Hangout is that I can select, now I'm the student, and I can select any 3 of those camera angles at any time during the course. So I can either be focusing on you or say you write something on the whiteboard. I could focus on the whiteboard and have that on my big screen. Or if there's a PowerPoint going on, I could focus on that. One of the big drawbacks to learning, of course, is when you're in a classroom, do you really stare at the teacher the whole time, right? I mean, do you really you're looking around, right. You're taking notes, you're doing stuff. So we're trying to provide multiple camera angles during this training to engage the learner a little bit better so that they kind of control, because in a classroom, you control what you do. And so we're trying to give them camera angles so they control either what they're seeing from a PowerPoint perspective or from a whiteboard perspective or from the other members in there. The other thing we know about learning, and you know this probably better than anybody, Dave, in the learning that you do. Imagine if your class, if you taught a class, but all the class members were behind a wall and you couldn't see them and they can't see you.
I did they're it all screwing, week.
Yeah, they're screwing off though, right? You know that.
Oh, it's hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you call on them, they're not ready, they're answering email. I mean, it's just terrible. So you have to engage. One of the things we're doing is everybody has to be on camera.
Ah, nice.
Right? So that you have accountability. Because you know, I know, I mean, I've been on conference calls before business-wise, right? And everybody's, they're on mute and they're jacking around in the background. They're having their own conversations. They're, you know.
Yeah. I did it this week. It was hilarious because I had one woman who was notorious for going, could you do that again? And I'm literally going painfully slow and I'm repeating it. Go to my computer, go to the C, go to this folder. Okay. Got that. Okay. So remember my computer C and I would like, I had four steps and every time I would take one step forward, I would repeat the previous three and she would always, can you repeat? And so I finally could, in the system we use, you can look over their shoulder once they get into a certain area. And sure enough, I'm giving her step by step, and she's, I don't know what she's doing. She's watching cat videos. I don't know. But, online training is a whole different beast.
You've got to get – they have to know that they're being watched. So you might ask the question if you're listening, why would we be talking about online training during a podcasting show? Well, the technologies are merging together, and this is what I'm trying to do is take – everything that I've learned from the engagement media of podcasting and what we do here, and I'm trying to apply that to distance learning. And so how do we create content that is as engaging as being there and that engages both the learner and the instructor? Because you know as an instructor, when you can see – this is the beauty of like – because we're on video right now. I can see you. You can see me. We are probably twice as more engaged in each other's conversation because we can see each other, right, as opposed to just not – when you don't see the person. So we're trying to capture that kind of feel in a classroom and also do it with consumer-grade hardware, right? Because – Cisco Telepresence wants $225,000 a seat.
Nice. Yeah. Darren in the chat room wants to know, what are you using to switch the camera?
Oh, okay. So for now, we're using Google Hangouts, which automatically switches the camera. So think of every camera angle as a new Hangout participant. So their cameras are down along the bottom, right? Their screens are down,
right.
You know, are along the bottom. That also allows us, because we thought about using a TriCaster and having one and then the producer would switch, but that's not great because that's more like a TV show and not an interactive Hangout. What we want is the people in the Hangouts to be able to select their own screen. So you use Hangouts with multiple people before, you know on your end on what camera you click is the one that stays in focus, or you can set it up to go automatically. I want to give the users the ability to adjust their camera angles.
Well, the other thing that it might appear off topic, but there are colleges now that they record every single lecture and they're finding it's boosting the grades. And I know as an instructor, you kind of get bummed that the question is, if people can just listen to the lecture, why would they come to it? And I can see that. Well, because there are those people that want to ask questions and things like that. And Steve Stewart is listening to this while mowing the lawn.
And he says he's paying attention. I highly doubt that.
And don't accidentally run over your feet, Steve.
And not just mowing, but he's texting.
That's another point, too. But, they're finding that those students that do want to go back and listen to the lecture again, it's boosting their grades. So podcasting is a great way to boost grades. And again, it gives the power of how people want to learn to them, or in your case, how they want to view the.
We want to give them as many options as possible. And, when you're a participant in the Hangout, now this doesn't work for people watching us, right? That's a public facing broadcast, but if you're in the Hangout, you have complete control of all the cameras that are listed at the bottom. I can see anybody I want and push them live screen, push them to the live screen. So it all came down. One of our learning directors was on a flight and someone was doing some interactive training on their iPad and they had control over what they were doing on the iPad on the flight. He goes, imagine if we did this live. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. The one drawback to Google Hangouts, of course, is you can only have 10 camera angles at a time. And if you use three of them for the studio and one for the producer, now you're down to six, and that's not scalable. So we will be looking at maybe Adobe Connect, or we have one called Samba that we may be working with. So now that I'm getting the equipment tested. You know, we have a, I have a big 65-inch screen. That's the instructor screen. And he'll view all the class participants on that screen and stand in front of that. And then right below that will be a smaller 22-inch monitor. That's his monitor. That'll show and be locked on just him so that he can, he, him or her, so that they can see, the instructor can see themselves. Cause that's important too, right? You want to know what you look like when you're, you know, it's the camera angle, right? Or things working okay and such. And then off to the sides are those PowerPoint cameras and the, or the PowerPoint monitors and a webcam monitor. So they'll have, it's a little bit like NASA in there.
I was going to say,
monitors everywhere. And the podcasters, the studio, the producer's desk has a four monitor. I bought one of those four monitor stands in a square format. And so I've got two on the bottom that run the show and then two up top that monitor everything that's going on the various PCs. There's seven PCs in that room right now.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool. It's, I'm really glad. It was just one of those things when they saw me. This is because of my podcast, right? So, you know, you're always asking for because of my podcast story. So because I, way back in the day, I joined somebody on a podcast. I started my own podcast. And after I started my own podcast, I got the opportunity to podcast at work. And because I, it went so well at work, I got an opportunity to build this studio. And so I'm learning a whole bunch of stuff about that. So because of my podcast, Dave, I got to do all those things.
There you go. At the 18-minute mark, I made a note of that. I'm like, okay, there you go. And
we're on 18 minutes already?
Yeah. Lofta. Yes.
Sorry.
Well, you got to remember the first, whatever, 3 minutes of that. That's true. We'll get whacked. Out. Yeah. Lofta says, I'm listening while shaving. And so there you go.
Yeah. Well, he's probably got the phone on speaker. And hey, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the for anyone who's using the podcasts app from Apple, the new update is kind of fun. You can now push a button and ask Siri to play a specific podcast. Like you can say, Siri, play School of Podcasting podcast. And she will do that. I was playing with that yesterday. I'm like, well, that's kind of cool. It's making it easier to listen. And then it also, it plays that, whatever the latest episode is from that podcast. And then it puts a button to open the podcast app. So I'm just like, all right, that again, if we're trying to teach people how to consume podcasts, it's like, okay, here, install this. And then I'm assuming you would have to be subscribed to the podcast. That's what I'll have to test and see if she can find a podcast that I'm not subscribed to and then play that. But that was one of the new updates in the recent release of the podcast app.
Hey, Dave, if someone wanted to call in, what number would they use?
That number would be, it's 845-262-2401. He said, running over to see if anybody is.
And isn't there like some music that usually plays when you say that number?
Oh, there is. It's definitely not.
I'm just wondering. I think I've heard that before.
Yes, here we go. That number again is 845-262-2401. That's 845-262-2401. Call now. Phone lines are open. So
we are waiting for your call.
That's right. And I'm just looking to see where the heck did I move? Oh, it's right by. I got like multiple. We do have a caller. I'm glad you said that.
Oh, good.
Speaking of that, ending in 0240, you're on with Dave and Jim.
Hey, Jim and Dave, how are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Hey, I just thought of this the other day, and I might be way off, but I wanted to run this thought through somebody who knows about podcasting.
All right.
So think about this. For example, in your case, we know that you have several websites. So imagine that for every website you had to register them in every browser. So like Explorer, Safari, Chrome, Firefox, etc. And then you had small ones like Opera who would pull the websites out of the directory, such as Safari, for example. Now, if you're not registered your site in that browser, it wouldn't show up there.
Can you?
Now, I don't know if you're following me.
No, I'm not. When you say register the browser, exactly what do you mean?
Imagine that you had to register your site in a browser. I'm just giving an example to go to my point later.
I'm not sure what you mean when you say register.
No, well, this doesn't exist. It's not that you're going to, not going to understand.
Do you mean just go to that website?
My point is.
So if I just go to a website, you mean, or register a domain?
Yeah. No, like your domain, your website. Imagine that if you wanted your site to show in Safari, you had to go to safari.com/register, and then you had to register your site there. So it would show up there. Now, my point is, how crazy it is that in the podcasting world, it is like that, I feel, somehow, because you have to register your podcast in every directory for it to show. How come up until this point, we don't have one directory only where everybody pulls out of? For example, ESPN only registers in iTunes. So if I don't have, for example, I had a friend the other day who their iTunes in their computer didn't work. They don't listen to podcasts on the phone. They only listen to it while they work. So they couldn't listen to any ESPN podcast. And I don't know. I think that's hurting the people that are confusing. For example, the Android people who don't have, only have Stitcher or right. other apps other than the podcast app.
Well, it is a good question. Why isn't there one? In the past, there was a service whose name escapes me because, and this is part of the problem, because technology changes all the time. It used to be you could go to one website and they would listen. They would list you in multiple directories at one time. You would basically say, here's my RSS feed. Here's my description. Here's my contact information. And you basically click a button. It would push it to about six or seven different places at the time. And I'm sorry, I didn't get your name when you called in.
Sure. My name is Emilio.
Emilio. So over the years, I don't know, like right now, SoundCloud, who is a quote media host, you can't get Libsyn and Blueberry and Spreaker. Spreaker now, you can get Spreaker stats in your Libsyn control panel and your Blueberry, but SoundCloud, for whatever reason, as much as everybody goes, oh, they're a big deal. No, they're not. You can't get their stats in Blueberry Libsyn. Like they can't all play nice together, and I'm not quite sure.
Well, isn't that's the draw of free enterprise, right? I mean, it's everybody's trying to get their own piece of the pie. And I mean, it would be nice if we all standardize on a single RSS feed, then you could put it to one place. But nobody's going to set up that one place to get it done. Everybody's going to want to take their slice of the pie.
The easiest way to do it, and the good news is you only have to do it once. So the bad news is you have to do it. The good news is you don't have to do it every time you put out an episode is – I usually recommend people go over to Podcast 411, click on the button that says Directory of Directories, and then either A, have a Word document open with all that information that you can copy and paste. I use a thing for the PC called Shortkeys that is basically a text expander. So when I type in RSS, it types in my RSS feed. When I type in pound description or something, it will type in the description. And you can go through all those directories in about 10 minutes. So it's not a huge undertaking. But you just do it once and you basically say, hey, iTunes, here's my podcast or here, Last.fm or all these other places. Here's my RSS feed. And once they're tuned into you, you just put out episodes and those will automatically update. So I agree. I wish there was a better way to have that. And so we didn't have to go to all those places. But if you're a developer, by all means, get on that. It would be great. But
because you have iTunes, Stitcher, Miro, BlackBerry, Microsoft, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, now SoundCloud. So for example, my friend who only has iTunes, but their computer is very old. He hasn't been able to update iTunes. He's not even able to listen to any ESPN podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. You're right. It's a disparate market, right? I mean, there's a wide variety and a lot of different things to go to, but I don't think it's ever going to get any better. In fact, I think it's going to get worse over the next couple of years as more companies like ESPN make a big deal out of their podcasts. And so they all want their slice and somebody's got to pay for the bandwidth and somebody's got to pay for the development. And so Emilio, I don't see it getting better, maybe staying the same or getting worse.
Do you have a podcast yourself?
I do. I have. I interview entrepreneurs. I am like John Lee Dumas, but I do it in Spanish.
There you go.
We got the John Lee Dumas reference.
I have to go for the unique.
Well, no, I'm like putting his own stamp on it.
I like it.
Yeah, and I'm being.
What's it called? Is it?
It's called Emprendedor Universal,
which means
you can. Entrepreneur, universal entrepreneur. So basically you're okay. Everywhere.
But it's not on fire. It's not.
It's not on fire.
Okay,
no.
Good. All right. Excellent. All right. So I was just making sure. If he tells me it's something like, something that would be. Stereotypically.
Prendedor en fuego.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, total
Jim, but one thing, like you said that you might not see it getting any better. I do think that hopefully, this is me hoping, it might be something like, you know, the fight when there was like HD DVD fighting with Blu-ray to see who would keep the HD version of DVD. Now, Blu-ray won and HD DVD went out of business. I think Sony was fighting for that HD DVD.
Right. So yeah, maybe it was Microsoft versus Sony.
iTunes will. Yeah, so hopefully iTunes will end up winning the war. I feel, I don't know if Stitcher is the biggest player against iTunes right now, but for example, there's little players that are pulling out of iTunes, actually a lot.
I hope that
it ends up being like that.
Yeah,
I think you're right. That's iTunes would make sense to be kind of the one ring to rule them all. But then you get weird things happening too. And this is where as podcasters, we don't actually want to favor one ring to rule them all, because once they get all the power, then they control everything. And if they want to shut somebody down for whatever reason, like Major League Baseball doesn't want them to say anything about sports ever again, then they just take them off. So for us, while it would be simpler to have, or more simple to have, kind of one place to go, the power associated with that, I think, is bad. And I think it would allow that, you know, that it was like internet domain registrations, right? And with ICANN. And so who's going to control all the registrations? Well, they put a committee together. It kind of worked, but it fallen into the wrong hands, it can be terrible. So while I agree for us it's easier, I think it's better for us if we have a diverse marketplace so that one player doesn't get too powerful.
Yeah, there are those that in the chat room, Emilio wants to know where you're calling from.
Well, I'm actually in Washington, D.C., but I am from the Dominican Republic.
Oh, there you go. And, there are those that say the best thing that ever happened to podcasting is Apple, and there are those that say the worst thing that ever happened to podcasting is Apple, because there were so many people that may have been working on new technology. And when Apple came in and it was like, gosh, they just took over in this big Godzilla shaped, you know, they just put such a big footprint that they went, I used to have a podcast directory. It was podcastcharts.com. And when iTunes came out, I went, never mind. And that was the end of podcastcharts.com. But yeah, it was a podcast directory. And I remember when there are a few celebrities that have come out that have just said, I'm on iTunes. You know, I remember when Jillian Michaels first came out on a podcast, she was only in iTunes. And I'm like, you're missing about 30% of your audience by not having an RSS. I always tell people, put an iTunes, put an RSS feed for those people who are geeky enough to figure out what to do with an RSS feed, and then be on Stitcher. Stitcher will boost your audience by about 10%, because right now that is the number one, I believe, aggregator. What I heard Rob Walsh from Libsyn say, that's the number one way people are consuming, which is kind of sad, because Stitcher has its pros and cons. I went back to the podcast app. So any other questions, Emilio?
No, that's it for me. Thank you for everything you guys do. I love the show, this one and the other one that you do too.
Oh, well, thank you so much for listening.
You bet. Great talking to you.
Yep. Have a good one. Jim, we have thank another you. Caller, man.
You too.
Thank you. So that's
like a real call-in show.
I know it is. It's amazing. So ending in 8171, give us your name. And if you have a podcast, tell us where that's at. And what's your question?
Hi guys. My name is Jason Bryant. I'm the host of the Short Time Wrestling podcast on audio.theopenmat.com. Been listening for at least to your live show for the last couple of weeks, and subscribing for the last couple of months as I learn and develop and harness and focus the product that I produce. Little background before I get to my question is that the Short Time Wrestling podcast is another deliverable that we give to our listeners, our subscribers, our fans of a larger national Olympic and college wrestling website called The Open Mat. I've been a journalist for about 18 years, so I'm pretty invested in the niche. And when you want to talk about a niche podcast, this is a niche type of niche type of niche type of thing, because it's about college and Olympic level wrestling, high school wrestling, things of that nature. So that being said, there's not a whole lot in my space. There is one other, I guess, competitor, you could say, but they term what they do as a podcast, even though it's not, because you can't get it on RSS. There is no iTunes listing, et cetera. But my question basically comes from an advertising perspective, because we're starting to pitch this to more sponsors and things of that nature. How much do potential advertisers want to know about the platforms you're on? Obviously, oh, I'm on iTunes. They know that. They'll probably know iTunes. But have you found any issues where advertisers don't really know that it's important to be on Stitcher, it's important to be on Spreaker? I mean, we're listed on iHeart, we're on iTunes, I've made sure we've gone through and we're on all the directories, we're on listed in Pocket Casts. We're actually going to be jumping into Swell sometime next week when they update their listing. So take Joe Q consumer in my or advertiser in my space. What do you think it means for them to be listed, to tell them I'm on TuneIn, I'm on Stitcher, and they have no idea what any of that means?
For the person who doesn't know what it means, they're going to go, wow, that's great. I don't know that they're going to ask about it. You're going to have a, because right now from what I hear, I was on the new media show last week with Todd Cochran and Rob Greenlee, and they're still saying there's at times the buyers are not quite up to speed on what's going on because they're coming from radio. They're trying to apply radio mindsets, I guess, to podcasting, and it's just not quite the same. I know in my case, I had a sponsor once that barely asked me how many downloads I had. I just had her target audience, and she was like, yeah, let's go. Here we go. How many episodes can I sponsor? And that whole thing. And to me, it's all about, I would think the first thing they're going to ask you is how many downloads would be the first thing. And then they're going to know, who am I talking to? You know, and any kind of information you can get about that. And there's, you know, Blueberry has a survey, Libsyn has a survey, Podtrac has a survey. You can make your own. If you go to polldaddy.com, you can make your own kind of questionnaire. And that will be definitely helpful, because they're going to want to know who they're talking to. And then with sponsorship, what I always tell people is it's your responsibility to prove that you are bringing traffic to them. So whether they set up, let's say it's whatever, canfruit.com, and you're like, okay, can you make a canfruit.com/Dave page? And that way I'll send people to that, and then they can track how much traffic you're sending to them, or if they have a coupon code or anything like that, that you can say, yes, that person came from me, because when that contract or over, whatever it is, if they sponsor you for 6 weeks, at the end of the 6 weeks, they're going to want to go, okay, we just did that. What did we get for it? And the one thing I want to say here, not that you ever would, but never, ever, ever inflate your numbers. If you got 150 downloads an episode, say I got 150 downloads per episode, because then, number one, you can price things accordingly. But number two, the expectations of the advertiser, they're not, if you say, well, see, I got 150, I'm going to tell them 1,500. Okay, well, they're expecting 1,500, and then go, okay, if we get 1% of that, that's, you know, and here you've added a zero. And so they're going to be really disappointed in the results that you're probably going to get. And then they're going to say, not only is your podcast a bad place to advertise, they're going to tell other people that, yeah, we tried podcasting, it was crap. So always be super accurate with that. But is it important? I think it would be good. To me, it's kind of like building a resume. Like, I could say the School of Podcasting is a top 20 podcast. It is in the podcast genre in iTunes. You know, there are ways, stats can always be kind of rearranged to kind of, you know, show you in the best light. But that is one thing I would say. I have seen media hosts, or not media, I've seen media kits where people actually put really bad stats in. Like, you know, in January, we had 1,000 listeners. In February, we had 800. And I'm like, that's going the wrong way. And in March, we had 750. I'm like, that's really going the wrong way. Why is that in your media kit? So always paint yourself in the best light. When making a media kit, that's where you can do things. If you can, get quotes from your audience, get them from iTunes, which is always kind of weird when you're like, SnickerBear36 thinks we're awesome. Yeah, I'm not sure if I would put that in a media kit, but in terms of Jim, anything you want to add to this?
Well, Jason, let me ask you, what kind of sponsors are you thinking about? What have they reached out to you, or are you going to reach out to them? What's been your process so far?
Well, right now, again, the space we're in is somewhat competitive in terms for sponsors, because in the sport of wrestling, there are just three or four of the real big names, like ASICS, Cliff Keen, the gear manufacturers, the wrestling shoe manufacturers, the headgears, the team equipment, the stuff you basically outfit your team. And they're being pulled by basically every other space out there. There are three or four wrestling magazines. There's about three or four main national wrestling websites. Ours is one of them. And basically, they're never going to get a good ROI on their advertising. They've always told one of the magazines we used to run, which was a print magazine, we were struggling to get advertising because the publication itself was about 50 years old. It came out in the 50s. And back in the day, everybody used to advertise with them. Now they're like, well, we're not seeing anything, so we're not going to go print. We have launched two digital magazines as well as our podcast. And so we're trying to bundle the actual website, basically the free site, our subscription site, our podcast, our two digital magazines into one advertising package. But now we've had that, and then we've launched the podcast into a separate advertising package because it's different than any other deliverable we have. And one thing that I think our wrestling community has is they don't really truly grasp the concept of what a podcast is. And that's one thing we're pushing. We have one subscriber or one sponsor right now, and they're actually sponsoring us with another point, but it's a headphone company, which seems to make sense because, you know, one of the deals is we'll use their headphones when we're doing our live broadcasts of college wrestling events. And then I'll use them when I'm doing my podcast or any promotional information. I'll be wearing those headphones. So they're also branded on our website with every new show that we have. And we put out three shows a week. So trying to get the advertiser to understand podcasting is a portable on-demand media. Like I look at another person in my space that had an interview with the same subject. Our podcast numbers were better than their YouTube video, which that video was the landing page of another competing national wrestling website. So I think there's value for our advertisers. We have to tell them that there's some type of ROI because typically in our space, there's no ROI on any type of advertising. A lot of these companies are just doing it to get one or two extra kids to their wrestling camp or, you know, basically for doing it for the good of the sport, which is commonly a throwaway phrase that a lot of advertisers use.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you, any of them offer any kind of affiliate relationship where instead of the, you know, the traditional advertising, you could prove to them through affiliate relationships where you're selling their stuff?
The affiliate program is kind of funky because we're based in Minnesota. And okay. This is one thing I learned by listening to Daniel J. Lewis's podcast. And I went to set up some Amazon affiliates because when I was in college, I'd actually was an affiliate with Amazon for selling some wrestling books like Vision Quest and The Art of Coaching Wrestling, things like that. The basic things that you can find in that section. And I was actually making a pretty good chunk. I was like, wow, why couldn't I do that? Well, Minnesota is one of those states where paperwork wise, they don't do it. Amazon does not allow an affiliate program through Minnesota. So I'm not sure.
I didn't necessarily.
Yeah. That's kind of one of the hurdles I'm jumping into.
But what about a direct affiliate relationship with these companies? So the wrestling shoe company, so to speak, that makes these specialized products, we use earbuds, right? I'm a runner and I use these earbuds, and they had an affiliate program where I could sell their products directly and make a commission off of those. Do any of those companies have direct marketing affiliate relationships you could start first to show them some of that ROI?
There's a couple smaller ones we're in negotiations with for certain things. Now, they're not the bigger ones. They're basically like authorized resellers and custom team apparel. So that's something we have on our list of things to consider. My technical background, I know a little bit about it, and having been an affiliate for certain things, it's just not something our space has seen a whole lot of. I don't know if they'd be willing to jump on that because, yeah, how much would they actually make out of it? How much would we make out of it? Would it be a good investment of time? Because one of the gear affiliates I was with about 10, 15 years ago when I had my first website, again, back 1998, 99, when I was in college, I was the number two seller in the country for gear sales on this one little website. And it brought me about $100 a month. But we're a national site where we've got a pretty good reputation. My name is actually fairly reputable within the industry. So that's one selling point we have is my name, my professionalism, my resume. But I'm finding it's like pulling teeth with some of these companies because they're so burned by not getting any advertising. But the affiliate thing, I think we might have to approach. I think that's a good idea. It's not something we fully have a whole lot of understanding of how to do. So
it's a very safe start. That would be the way I would approach it with them, is to say, because if you go affiliate, you're not at anything, they're not at anything. And you can kind of say, hey, look, let's start an affiliate relationship and let's see how much stuff we sell. And if the stuff sells, well, then you have engagement and you can flip that over to an advertising, a relationship that you have with them. If you start the affiliate relationship and you sell nothing, well, guess what? It's probably not a great relationship to have. So, with an affiliate, you're out nothing, they're out nothing. If something gets sold, that's good for you and good for them. You make a little bit off that. But I wouldn't worry about what I make off the affiliate relationship. I would worry about the tracking of those products sold, because I think that's the best indication of engagement in their product with your listeners.
And that's one of the things you might do if you make your own kind of survey of your audience. I know I filled out things, do you plan on buying a car in the next 2 years? I'm like, why are they asking that question? Well, because they probably have a car sponsorship in their pocket and they're trying to prove that. So you might say, what are the following places you shop at online? Or what were your most recent purchases and things like that? And then that might give you an idea of, okay, here's what my audience is buying, and approach those people. And with affiliate stuff, one of the things that I always say is, if you can find something that you use and you love. So for me, I love my Fitbit. It's he said, pulling it out of his pocket. It's in my front pocket. It's a thing for my Logical Weight Loss podcast. It's like $99. I tried promoting the Total Gym for years. That was $300. So it's this cute little pedometer thing. And I can see that right now I am up to 1,669 steps for the day. And, I stood in line at the BMV, the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, this morning. So I did a whole lot of nothing this morning before the show started. And but anyway, I make $9 every time somebody buys one. And so $9. The My Speed, the thing I've been promoting on this show, if you go to askthepodcastcoach.com/MySpeed, I don't know who's buying it, if it's this audience or Weekly Web Tools, but it's a really cool software product. I actually used it this week. You can make some killer, killer software. So I'm talking about things that I like firsthand that just happen to have an affiliate program. And I made 3 figures with that cute little software program this week. I think most of that was from Weekly Web Tools. I wish there was a way to track that. I could go back and see where it's coming from, and I might be able to set that up. But sometimes if you get the right product, affiliate marketing will pay more than, cost per download or pay per download kind of stuff, depending on the scenario. And what's nice about that is you can then kind of treat that like a sponsor. And then once you have your media kit, then you can say, okay, here's the deal. And you can do things like, you can Google podcast stats. I'm sitting here, I've been drawing a blank for the last 10 minutes on the name of the company that does stats. They do a report on stats almost every year at the podcast, at the New Media Expo, and it's driving me nuts. But they have a lot of thing about what the average person is that listens to a podcast. You can always throw out that Apple has stated that there are 1 billion podcast subscribers. Is that what that stat was, if I remember right? And the average, podcast listener is this. They're smart, they're educated, that kind of thing. That will, in some cases, help entice sponsorship, because they get an idea of who's consuming the content in general. And then if you have one on your own, it's like, here's some general stats about podcasting, here's who my audience is. And then the clearer the picture you can paint there, the better.
Right. Yeah. Cause statistics wise, we use Blueberry. I actually was doing a self-hosted thing until I read the last couple of weeks. It's kind of been a topic on not putting your own content on your own web server. And I'm like, you know what? That's definitely a good idea. So we actually migrated over to Blueberry, and I got to say, Todd Cochran and his staff did a great job at helping me walk through that process. They were Johnny on the spot there. So I'm pleased with that. I've had the stats program for a couple of the podcasts that I've done in the past. And it's funny, because I'll see consumption of a name. Like, there's a kid that wrestled at Penn State named David Taylor, one of the more popular college wrestlers in the last 4 or 5 years. His podcast had 10 times more downloads than the one I put out on Monday with Mo Lawal, who's fighting in Bellator actually tonight against Quentin Rampage Jackson. So that's a crossover MMA wrestling type of content. But I've noticed there's the regular listeners. It's, if I'm looking at 250, 300 a show, I feel good. And then I'll get the spike where I'll get 2,500, 3,000 for a show. So sometimes, you know, a baseline stat doesn't necessarily work for me, but Blueberry has been great for that. And I'm doing my best not to be addicted to my stats, like so many of you guys tell us not to do. It's very hard to not look at it and be like,
yeah,
I want to know how many this kid had.
I just put out a new video. Blueberry stats are great. I should probably mention, speaking of affiliate stuff, if you want to sign up at Blueberry, use the coupon code SOPFREE and get a free month there. And I was playing with Libsyn stats. And when you're in Libsyn stats, so everybody get ready to obsess. When you go in and there are these little circles at the top of he said, if you're listening to the recording of this, you just heard the video start. Because I'm going to put this in the chat room. There are these little bubbles, and when you click on them, you can see how it'll say, here's how many podcasts you had on whatever, May 17th. When you click on that, you can see where those podcasts came from. And it was amazing, again, to see how much your back catalog is downloaded. Because obviously the top ones are the last like two or three episodes. But then I could see where going back to 2012, I had an episode that was still being downloaded. You know, it was only one time, but I always say that one download could be somebody who's now telling one more person, oh, you got to listen to this show. So, yeah, stats are it's hard not to get obsessive on them. And I know I actually have my own. I go in once a week and I look at my monthly totals, and I have a chart that I do on my own for that. And it can make you really happy or you're about ready to jump off the ledge, because there are times it's huge swings from month to month. And you're like going, what did I do different? It's kind of bizarre that way. So, but awesome.
Yeah, I was expecting the Mola Wall podcast on Monday to have a lot bigger reach than it did, because he's got about 58,000 followers on Twitter and he retweeted it a couple times. And it's like, well, I guess there's not as much of a crossover with the wrestling fan base to the MMA fan base, at least from our side, than there is. And it's just sometimes weird, because the podcast I put out actually yesterday is about an 11-year-old kid in New Jersey who started a nonprofit to give, you know, wrestling shoes that are used from his team and clubs around the area to the kids less fortunate. And I'm sitting there going, that's one I'm definitely wanting to get more people to listen to. And it's just like, I'd love for more than 200 people to actually listen to this show.
Yeah. We'll give it time. And, it is, I wish we could find the magic bullet for that, you know, of how do I just get 1,000 people, but,
Well, but I, even in 1,000, Dave, I don't think CPM works until you get 5,000 or more.
No.
And so it's just, I don't think we shouldn't think in those terms of CPM until we're more than 5,000. So I think for the smaller podcasts, mine included, I'm about 1,000. I'm not even, and I don't do advertising, but if I did, I think I would go the affiliate route to start with and grow my relationship with the organization that way.
Yeah. I know my Logical Weight Loss podcast is about somewhere between 1200 and 2000 an episode. Again, it really depends on the headline. I think sometimes has a lot to do with that. And
CPM is just too small in that the numbers just don't work. I mean, the math doesn't work that way.
It works for the John Lee Dumases of the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you need more than 5,000 for the most part. I just think that's the magic number.
Yeah. I think PodTrack, you need 20,000 downloads per month. So if you're doing a weekly show, and as I go into my monetizing section in Libsyn, they have a thing that says, let's see, 10,000 U.S. downloads a month required. If you want to have, you know, producers at Libsyn hosting levels can sign up below to confirm interest in being added to our list of shows to contact for advertising campaigns. No minimum Libsyn hosting plan required. 10,000 U.S. downloads a month required. You get the final say on the advertiser. You split the revenue 50-50. Now realize you did nothing to get it. That just shows up. And you can pick custom ad slots, and advertisements can be live read or stitched in. So yeah, you need 10,000 downloads a month, which I know this show does not get, but
Jason, do you guys do any live remote stuff where you're doing interviews or stuff at events, or have you thought about opening or purchasing or some of these events to just let you have a free table where you do live podcasting from a meet? Or some of those kinds of things where you can gain your exposure to a bigger audience a little bit at a time?
We actually do live events. I came on with this company about 2 years ago, and they had started live audio. And that's actually one thing we're actually going to move to the Mixler route to try that this year, because we've been using Ustream for our live audio broadcasts. And We do some of the larger college wrestling tournaments. We do the Division I Nationals, the Midlands, and we, being based here in Minnesota, we do a lot of the University of Minnesota home matches, which they're ranked number one, number two in the country seemingly every year. So we get a good listenership with our live broadcasting, but our season basically went through this year, and I was still developing the short time podcast. So I hadn't had a full year to really look at what potentially works, but we do live events pretty much everywhere we're at. I mean, we don't just limit it to the big boys. We go down and do Division II and Division III matches, some NAIA. For those that are familiar with college sports, we concentrate on the entire realm of college wrestling. We probably do 50 live events a year. So,
okay, so you're out there live.
Being able to harness that into our audio packaging.
Are you advertising?
And not to mention my side, I've done television.
When you're at the live events, I don't think the power of the live event is actually, in this case, is the live broadcast itself as much as it is the atmosphere it creates around all those people that are there live. And so if you're looking to gain listeners, you have a captive audience at that event to go by your live booth and pick up information about what you're doing, right? I mean, I think if you want to grow your audience is there at the meet, right? They're there around you doing those things. And I think that's an opportunity, and maybe you're doing this, but for those that are listening, I think those live events, it's as much of a promotional opportunity for what's being broadcast live as it is for those people around you to learn more about, because they'll see you with a microphone, they'll wonder, hey, what's going on here? It's kind of cool. It's a cool atmosphere. We do this with the tech conferences all the time. And the purpose isn't necessarily the live product. The purpose is to advertise to those people who are at those conferences, the live people that are there, and give them some information and say, hey, here's our podcast. Would you, you know, here's some information about how to listen to it.
Yeah, get some business cards made, not so much to contact you, but here's, you know, your logo, find us in iTunes, you know, whatever your tagline is, and, you know, be there, go get a, what do you call those things? A mic flag, you know, throw that on there with your logo. Yeah.
And you guys might be doing that already.
Yeah. And have some sort of little, you know, cheesy sign that says, hey, you're listening, you're watching the broadcast of such and such. Because step number one of podcast promotion, of course, is figure out who your audience is. And then step number two is go where they're at. Well, you're on step two. And so while you're there, be sure to shake a lot of hands and make some friends. And oh, by the way, while you're here, if you want to hear what we recorded here, you know, and in some cases, I don't know if you can work the audience into the podcast, that works gangbusters. When I was in a band, we used to take pictures of everybody at the gig, and religiously, if we played on Friday or Saturday, it was on the website by Monday. We would tell people, and it was amazing. We can all sing "You're So Vain" together here, how people love to see pictures of themselves. But I had a guy came up to me at a gig and he said, hey, wait, come here, take my picture. I'm like, why? He goes, I just got new glasses. I want to show my sister in Florida. Now, this was pre-Facebook, obviously, but they were communicating with their family on our website. So maybe if you can somehow get the audience involved, because then they'll say, hey, I was on this podcast. Check it out. Listen. So I don't know if that's an option, but anytime you can get the community involved, it's a good thing. I just on the podcast review show, we just reviewed Gary Leland, who does a show about fast pitch softball. And he did a thing where he was interviewing an Olympic pitcher. And he went to his Facebook group and said, okay, I'm going to be interviewing Jenny, whatever her name is. And, you know, do you have any questions for her? So he was able to, and he gave credit to whoever it was, you know, hey, this question is from Eileen in Poughkeepsie. She wants to know blah, blah, blah. So it was a cool way to get his community involved. It was almost like they were interviewing her. So anytime you can get your community involved, that's always a good thing too.
Excellent. Excellent.
So awesome. Anything else we can help you with?
No, I just like to say basically this podcasting thing has kind of been a pet project for the last couple months. And at least it seems like in listening to your show, listening to the podcast roundtable with Ray Ortega, with Cliff Ravenscraft, with Daniel J. Lewis, the collective, I guess the, I don't know what you guys are calling yourselves when you guys are together, but between all of those shows, I've found so many different little things that have helped me hone things right down to my podcast setup, right down to using Blueberry, right down to using the ATR 2100 pop filters, things like that. And I mean, I had broadcasting equipment because I do broadcasting, I do television, I've done radio, I've done this stuff for almost 20 years. So I'm familiar with, you know, basic tenets of broadcasting, But the setup, the technology and things like that, that's where everybody, your show specifically, Daniel J. Lewis, all those guys in the space, the podcast about podcasting space, I pick something up from each and every one of you. So, and I got to say, I've dropped an email to you once or twice. You were quick to respond. Same with Daniel, same with Ray. So I just want to thank you guys for what you do for people like us, because I don't have an opportunity to broadcast nearly as much as I used to. And the podcast has given me that ability to continue doing with what my passion is and putting it in a new type of format and a new type of medium that is portable. And that's one thing we're selling to people, is that you can listen to it anywhere. It's not like you've got to watch a YouTube video in your car with the talking head. You can listen to it. I mean, I listen to y'all's podcast when I'm driving for 8-9 hours to a national tournament in the middle of Kansas, for example. So that's basically what I want to say. And thank you. And thanks for taking the call. And I listen to the show frequently and consume as much information about podcasting on podcasting that I can. So again, thanks to both you guys for the show and taking my call today.
Well, thank you, Jason. Yeah, we had somebody listening today while they were mowing the lawn on his phone. And I spent 3 hours on Thursday driving to and from. I was bummed because I didn't get to, I wanted to try to catch Nick Suberling. I was actually near Toledo last week, but I had 3 hours in the car and was knocking off Internet Business Mastery, a little Ask Pat, a little Geologic Podcast. I was knocking down podcasts. But yeah, I believe when Ray and Daniel and I get together, we when we put on our capes and stuff, I think we put our fists together and lightning comes out and like, you know, 2-3 power podcasters or some. I don't know what we should be called. I don't know. Some sort of.
Thanks for calling in, Jason.
Yeah, I just know my cape right now is in the cleaner, so it's a problem.
Wouldn't that be fun? Yeah, on Saturday mornings, Dave, you've always got your cape on.
But
it's all good. Those are some good. First of all, Jason's got a great voice.
He does. Ryan Parker said
he's in broadcasting.
Yeah, Ryan says he sounds like, and this is a good thing, Bubba La Love Sponge. To a certain extent. And, hey.
Yeah, no, that was good. Good question.
Since we started a little late, can you go a little late?
Yeah. Good? I got nothing today. Okay. I just have to mow the lawn.
Oh, there you go. Well, we'll podcast for hours.
Saturday morning lawn mowing. You know how it goes. It's long too. We got a lot of rain. It's long.
Yeah, that's always fun. This is the joy of life.
The three pod migos.
There you go.
That's awesome. John Parker.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Next week, he's going to come on for a bit with us. Ryan Parker, who's in the chat room. If all goes well, I'll leave him an out because, you know, life happens. But if all goes well, Ryan is going to come on and share his screen. And we're going to get a little behind the scenes look at the new Michael Hyatt theme, which is called Get Noticed, which is $198 for one website right now. And that price is going up. And I was like, that was kind of like, you know, to me, I guess we'll find out. I just know my first thing was I can go to ThemeForest and get a really cool theme like Avada for $55 and put it on any website I want. So it's got to have, it maybe comes with free Girl Scout cookies for life or something. I don't know. But for me, that was a little.
Well, if it's good though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tool.
I love Michael Hyatt. I love his podcast, love his book. But I was thinking about buying it and I'm like $198. I'm like, well, you know what? If I put it on all my sites, it's 5 sites. And then I was like, ooh, 1 site. I was like, yeah. And that's, I think you get a year's worth of support with that. And I was kind of
bored on it.
But,
Dave, I'm upgrading some equipment here in the studio, and I just bought a Core i7 processor for a new PC that's going in, and you know it's $300. So you know you get what you pay for, and so that's the trouble maybe with the price points that have come out with with WordPress themes, is they've all been $25, $30, $40 bucks.
Well, and
that's a lot of work that goes into those things.
Well, and kind of like Jason was talking about, you know, you kind of have to know your audience. Michael's audience, you know, apparently has some cash. So, you know, if you can get it, why not charge that way? And you know what? Just because we've mentioned Steve Stewart, I have to say moneyplansos.com just to make him smile even more.
There you go. It's funny when you're, you know, when you're pricing, when you're building stuff, like I've been building stuff for the studio. Mm-hmm. And I am not quite as price sensitive when I'm buying stuff for that than I am when I'm buying stuff for my own studio with my own money. Now, I'm not saying I go out and just blow it, right? I've tried to find good deals, but you know, I needed a 4-monitor stand. I bought one. It was $92 on Amazon, right? And just bought it. It's just what you do. It's like, I've got 4 monitors. I need to figure out how to get them in the right configuration so I can get my job done.
Right.
I needed that body pack. It was $600. I bought it because I need it. I have to have it. At home, I'd find a way around that, right? I'd be like, well, because it's home. It's janky. I don't do this for a living.
Right.
Right. It's one of those kinds of things when you're doing it for a living. So I think he might be focusing more on the business end, which is like, hey, look, I built this super robust WordPress theme that'll do all these things that we've been asking for a long time. And he's probably put a lot of time into it. And so if it's worth $200 to you and it does some stuff and it helps you bring in more revenue or it helps you do podcasting better or helps you whatever it helps you do.
It's got a lot of really cool stuff. I've watched the videos. I signed up for the beta release and I kept hearing him say it's probably going to be $198 and I really didn't think that was going to be for one website. So maybe that's
– yeah. I like $99. That would have probably been appropriate. That would have been good for a premium. Ryan Parker's calling it a super premium theme. Super premium $99. That would seem to make sense to me, but the market will determine that, right?
Yeah, I guess that's it.
If he gets it, hey, keep it the same price. If he doesn't, I'm sure it'll go on sale.
That's right. Meanwhile, John Lee Dumas is charging $1,500 for 80 minutes worth of consulting. And hey, if you can get it, why not?
Exactly. This is America, right? If you can do it and people will pay for it, it's not illegal.
That's right. And people will pay for convenience. I heard a podcast today that they were talking about that. And I thought, you guys ready for I'm going to unveil my new catchphrase. You ready?
Yeah, go.
Dave Jackson, home of pain-free podcasting.
Oh, very nice.
Because I thought about that. It's really what I do. I do the technical stuff, but really it's about how do I do this without pulling out my hair. And I thought, I like pain-free podcasting. I like that. That's kind of cool. It's what I'm looking for and things of that nature. So pending all goes well in the world of Ryan Parker, we'll be taking a peek at that next week on the show, which will be interesting because it's an audio show. But I thought, you know, we got the video thing. And if it doesn't work on video, I'll just cut it out of the audio. But I thought for the YouTube thing, it'll be cool to kind of peek over Ryan's shoulder and, I'll just have to remind him to get all the porn off of his website before we do that, of course. No, I mean, I'm kidding.
Ryan Parker said he just copyrighted that phrase, so he took it. You're going to have to pay him for it.
That's it. I'm off to buy the domain right, because actually right now I don't own the domain.
I told you, Logical Podcast last week. Logical Podcast. It's available. Still out there.
There you go. Waiting for me to come and
get it. Waiting for you to buy it. Yeah, you bet.
But we are going to fade in the music here and want to thank everybody for coming out as always. We are here every Saturday morning. This was fun. This is actually like a call-in show. We actually had callers and everything.
It's real.
It's real. So thanks to everybody who called in, Emilio and Jason. And, next week it could be you. And we would love to hear from you. And if you have any questions between now and then, you can go out to the schoolofpodcasting.com and click on the contact tab there in the upper left-hand corner. That will stop it from getting lost in the mountain of email that I've been getting lately. So that's my preferred method these days. But always glad to have you, Jim. As always, thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
And where can people find you?
AverageGuy.tv.
And you can find me at schoolofpodcasting.com. You can find this show at askthepodcastcoach.com. And we will see you next week with another episode of Ask the Podcast Coach.